I'm Zach Abramowitz, and I am Legally Disrupted. On today's episode of Zach Abramowitz's Legally Disrupted, we talk to Spellbook CEO Scott Stevenson. Spellbook is one of the fastest growing legal technology companies. Scott originally started this company as Rally, but then introduced large language models, renamed the company Spellbook, and the rest is history. Let's get disrupted. So, Scott, for those who are not as familiar with Spellbook, tell us a little bit about what Spellbook is and how lawyers are using it.
Yeah, sure. So Spellbook is an AI copilot for corporate and commercial lawyers, transactional lawyers in particular. As far as we know, we were actually the first company. There's a lot of companies that claim this, but we were the first company to sort of bring LLM to lawyers sort of earlier in 2022. And so we launched this before ChatGPT and things like that. And it's been doing really well. We primarily focus on really drafting and reviewing documents, commercial and corporate documents. You could use Spellbook, for instance, to help you negotiate a contract for your client. You could say, hey, my client's very concerned about data security. You have a big MSA with a vendor and you want to figure out, you know, is this going to meet the client's kind of, you know, data privacy standards that they need to meet and negotiate against the vendor on those points. It will actually redline the contract for you. So not only will it bubble up, you know, things that you might care about, it will actually produce kind of draft red lines that you can actually insert directly into the document. And we've been working on that for quite a while, and that's one of our main features. But you can also, you know, do things that people are familiar with, like, you know, ask questions about the document or kind of get checklists or kind of run playbooks on the document and all those sorts of things. We are primarily in Microsoft Word today. So we're on the side of Word while you're working. And we do sell to lawyers. Yeah, basically only lawyers. So, you know, sometimes there are, you know, like contract staff working under a lawyer, something like that. But generally, we sell this just to lawyers. And we're really focused on law firms in particular. Right. We have in-house teams on board too, but very focused on law firms.
Yeah, I think that the thing that really interested me when I first started following Spellbook was watching a demo. And I'll tell you what really caught my eye. As the demo looked like someone was putting in comments on the side of a document. And they looked like the kind of comments that a partner would have once upon a time scribbled into a document and then handed over to an associate to run with it. Now, for someone who's never worked in a law firm, they may not realize that an associate will typically spend hours afterwards taking those comments and turning them. And once upon a time, I looked at that and I was just like, oh, these lazy partners scribbling these comments. And I found it sort of annoying. And only later did I realize that that is effectively not just because of the business model of a law firm, which requires partners to be very busy out selling business, but just because when you go through a document, you can't both be a commenter and a solver. It's like a different stage of the assembly line. So if you're like going through a document and putting very high level comments in, it's almost like a deep work. It's a deep work process that you're going through, and it's not simple. And being able to scribble in those comments is actually the most effective way to go through an agreement. Now, what caught my eye about Spellbook is that all of a sudden you were taking those types of comments, which were like, hey, go see what we did in this other deal, or we need more robust protection here, or this leaves us open. These types of comments, all of a sudden you're pressing a button and now it's doing that work. And I thought, wow, it means that from a work process, you're actually empowering the attorney to work in the best way that they can, and then taking this job that they might have once upon a time given to another lawyer to spend hours turning, they could do it on their own. And that really caught my eye. So I know that like the features that you have surface a number of issues on their own when it reviews the agreement. But to me, the thing that was so cutting edge was the ability to sort of leave these kind of difficult to understand comments, you know, that normally would require huge amounts of turnaround time. And I think any lawyer who's done this kind of work has, you know, probably done this at like 2 or 3 in the morning when it's like, oh my God, it's like really, really stressful to do it. And I've always felt like the real promise of AI and it is not just about becoming more efficient. It's about creating like an actual better work experience. Feels like you do that.
100%. I think you've just described the value proposition of our product better than I ever have. So great job on that. That's exactly how we see it. And that's like exactly the value that I think our customers get. And yeah, it is that pain of, you know, having a deadline, being up at 2 a.m. or midnight, trying to turn these vague comments into actualizing them into the document and doing that nitty-gritty work of, you know, you have a 60-page agreement in front of you and making sure you didn't miss anything, or the junior associate doing that. The turnaround time on that is long, and it's very difficult, yeah, to jump between those two mindsets, like you said. So yeah, that's a lot of what we're trying to do. And I think, you know, I think when a lot of folks go to law school, you know, they do not quite always grasp exactly how brutal the later stage of that process is of, you know, actually implementing the changes, you know, in a 60-page document and making sure you're not missing anything and cross-referencing against 5 other Word documents that are also on your screen at 2 a.m. You know, that can be fun sometimes, but it's not always the fun that lawyers imagine themselves doing when they went to law school. So I think our product enables more lawyers to spend time on this, the solving, like you said, and less on that minutia. And that's what our customers really love.
Yeah, it feels like you would like it both from the perspective of like a partner and from the perspective of the associate. And what I mean by that is, and again, I'm using sort of loose terms here. Let's talk senior lawyer, junior lawyer. If you're the senior lawyer, and maybe theoretically you're now working and you don't have a junior underneath you, this sort of allows you to say, okay, I can still do this deep work. I can still sit here going over every line of this agreement and putting in my comments. And I know that afterwards, I'm not necessarily going to have a separate person do that. I can kind of keep this document with me. And I think as we're seeing, you know, more and more lawyers explore the possibility of branching out, starting their own practices, a tool like that could be really, really popular. And I know you've got huge use with like the quote unquote midsize and small law firms as well. But then on the other side is like the, because I know you also work and I've talked with law firms, bigger law firms that are using your product as well. And I think from the perspective of the associate or that junior lawyer who's turning the changes, that also feels to me like a much better work experience where I'm not having to start from scratch. I'm not having to take every single comment and then do multiple searches in my document management system for that precedent or a previous precedent. I'm able to kind of stay within one document. So it feels like it improves user experience on both ends.
Yeah, massively. I think it definitely does improve experience on both ends. Your comment about it appealing to lawyers who are going out and starting on their own or, you know, just smaller firms and solo lawyers, that is also where we're seeing this technology uptaking the fastest, I think, like radically, radically fast. Like I've never seen anything like it before. And in like my whole career in working in software, I've never seen like a customer segment adopt a product this fast. And I think in the solo firms, you know, you don't necessarily have as many junior associates, or you might not have any junior associates, you could just be the partner. You may not have much other support staff. So being able to kind of context switch between those different modes and kind of be able to kind of do them both yourself or kind of handle the whole document on your own, I think is pretty important for a lot of our customers. And I think it's a really interesting trend because it does make it more viable, I think, to be a solo or small boutique firm lawyer. You know, previously the work-life balance has been rocky at best for a lot of people in those roles, especially because the work is lumpy. You know, you might have no work for a couple of weeks and then all of a sudden 5 clients want something done tomorrow and then you're up till 2 a.m. And that's it's really tough. Yeah, we have been finding that those solo and small firms who are, you know, where you have lawyers both sort of taking on the partner role and also doing the document editing, the minutia is one of the places where this type of technology is being adopted the fastest. it's really interesting that large firms are adopting this type of technology too, and we've sold to some very large firms as well. But the value props very different there. I would say there we hear people concerned more about consistency. How do we get the firm standards across, you know, this army of junior associates and partners? How do we make sure that everyone on the team is doing things our way and hold, you know, kind of protecting our brand and, you know, our 10 to 20 years or decades of experience? How do we codify that and enable everyone on our team to access that? So it's interesting how they're actually like fairly different value props depending on the firm size from what we've seen.
I was meeting with a firm recently, and while I was meeting with them, there were several attorneys who were on their way to a meeting to work on their spellbook playbooks. And okay. I've actually seen this in a large firm setting. I have seen this actually play out. I feel like playbooks have been tried forever and they're always a disaster, but yet these lawyers seemed really optimistic about the chances of creating playbooks with spellbook. Why have contract playbooks not worked in the past? Maybe like if there are those listening to this podcast who don't know what a contract playbook is, maybe let's give a little bit of intro there, but why have they not worked and why are they working with spellbook?
Yeah, sure. Really good question. So we've heard people use different definitions, but on large, it's a set of standards that you would use to review and negotiate a document. It may contain different fallback positions, different things you might accept or not accept, and also just, you know, key terms that you would extract on every document. You know, a repeatable playbook to review and negotiate, you know, a particular type of document containing the standards that you want your team to adhere to. First, these are usually much more popular on in-house teams, because on an in-house team, you have one set of standards, there's one client, yourself, and you're reviewing the same documents over and over. And I think playbooks have actually been somewhat successful on in-house teams for a while, and there's products out there for that. But on the firm side, it's much harder because, you know, I would say, like, we've noticed, you know, some interesting patterns working with law firms for a while. And one of them is every firm has great ambitions around standardization and precedence and playbooks. But at the end of the day, you know, everyone's jumping from deal to deal, you know, and doing those billable hours. And there's rarely a time when there's not some, you know, deal, hot deal on the burner that you're working on. So I think, they haven't worked well in firms because every client has different needs and preferences. B, you know, everyone's focused on getting billable stuff done. There is very little to no time, you know, for most lawyers to spend on, you know, curating their perfect precedent library or creating templates or making playbooks. And this is something that when we actually decide what we're going to build at Spellbook, there's one like kind of contrary thing we say, which is that like, lawyers at law firms, they will tell you all the time how much they're going to invest in their process and their playbooks and stuff this year, and it never happens. And so we tell our product management team, like, every customer you talk to is going to tell you how excited they are to, you know, set this stuff up, but it rarely happens. But there's a shortcut here. And the shortcut is, can you build a workflow where a lawyer can sort of be building their playbooks ad hoc as they're working and as they're doing the deal? And I think that's the shortcut that we try to do with Spellbook for law firms. And it doesn't have to be the perfect playbook. It doesn't have to be, you know, amazing. But the key for us that we find is, in order for a law firm to make use of these sorts of things, they have to almost be able to do it as they're working on a deal. So how that works is maybe you find a really good prompt for Spellbook as you're just working on, you know, an MSA. You'll see a button that just says, you know, save this as a playbook. And so that's your starting point right there. You're just working in Spellbook. You got a really good result that you liked. And you're like, oh, that I'm going to save this for later. And then you can sort of incrementally build on it as you go. It's always there. It's not like you have to go into this other mindset where you're deeply thinking about, you know, the next 5 years of playbooks that you need.
Right.
You know, you're just kind of incrementally doing it as you go. And I think that's like so key to our whole approach, and what makes us different is like, we want to be the electric bicycle for lawyers. The lawyer knows how to ride a bicycle already. You know how to ride a bike. You're going to keep riding the bike, but you're going to feel yourself pedaling faster if you're using Spellbook. And everything we do is around that. So it doesn't have to be a big habit change. helping the lawyer build out all of this stuff as they're working. And the cool thing, we actually haven't launched this yet, but we've started to build sort of these AI-based playbooks where you can start it with like, oh, I'm reviewing an MSA, and it'll give you an idea for all these rules. It can take your own rules, and then you can have a button, and based on all the rules and things that you've already added, you can be like, suggest five more for me. And it will just, based on your style, based on what you're doing, based on what it knows about your preferences, it will just suggest new rules for you. So you can really quickly go from zero to, you know, a decent playbook pretty quickly, and then, you know, share that with your team and incrementally improve it, you know, as you're working. So.
And I like the electric bike analogy, and I know that you built your app in as a Microsoft Word plugin to kind of meet lawyers where they are to that point.
Exactly.
And I think there's also a kind of humility in saying an electric bike, because what it admits is like, hey, actually there's a certain rationale to the way you work. Right. So like, I thought about this a lot, like, cause you, when we were talking at Legal Week, you mentioned something to me that as soon as you said it, like I knew it was deeply true, that lawyers don't use templates.
Yeah.
And I started thinking about part of why that's true. And
we were a template company.
Right. I want to get to that, right? But like, yeah, you are the expert in this, that lawyers don't use templates. And I actually said this to a client of ours after meeting with you. And I was like, you know, I want to tell you that something that I heard from Scott Stevenson. He said, lawyers don't use templates. And I have to, and I said, listen, I didn't practice for all that long, you know, just a couple of years. But in the, you know, 2+ years that I worked as an M&A attorney, number one, I don't remember using a single template. And then to your point before about, you know, about like tagging and metadata, I never once in my life,
right,
certainly not at 2 to 3 in the morning after finishing up a long day at the office, said, and now I will spend the next 30 minutes tagging all of these documents with the relevant metadata. That's not a thing. No one does that. And it's perfectly understandable why. I think it's why a lot of tools haven't made their way into law firms beforehand, because yeah, it's hard to train a staff that's up like till 4 in the morning, the night before a deal signs, you know, just making sure that every signature is there. I mean, it's just, it's not so feasible. But I think that what I took away from this, and why what I spoke about humility of the electric bike analogy, is there's a reason that people like to work from the most recent document, because the most recent document that you've signed, the most recent purchase agreement, the most recent, you know, whatever the document is, the fact that it was negotiated recently by two smart firms probably means it's the closest to market standard at that given moment in time.
Exactly. 100%. That's totally what we've seen. And it's close to market standard, and it's just in your brain. You know, you've loaded that context in your brain. You don't have to, you know, understanding all the nuances of that document, you know, takes a lot of time. And to pull up, you know, a totally different one or an older one that you haven't processed recently is risky. Yeah. So we've totally designed Spellbook also around that idea of getting away from templates, getting away from and getting into, yeah, just reuse the most recent precedent that you've had, and then we'll help you modify it for your new deal.
So I was listening to a podcast that you did with Chad Main from Technically Legal. I'm a big fan of Chad's podcast. I've been listening to it for years. I've been a guest a couple of times.
It was fun.
And you mentioned before that you've never seen, you know, a specific vertical all of a sudden pick up technology this fast. And Chad, I really recommend that people listen to your episode with Chad if they want to get like a better sense of like why it is you created this company. But one thing I want to focus on is before you were Spellbook, you were Rally Legal. You actually had quite a bit of traction as a company, but you mentioned this stat on Technically Legal that you're now getting 500 meetings per week booked for people to demo Spellbook, right? That like anyone who thought that like all this AI stuff is just more hype, like I really encourage them to look at the uptick in traction from Rally to Spellbook. Like that just feels to me like this is like a microcosm of what's going on in our industry. So can you talk about like the transition from a pre-large language model templating company to now a large language model infused, I want to say like a an intelligent legal drafting company, but I just think about what to call it, a legal electric bicycle.
Yeah, sure. Great question. I love talking about this. And I think it's like super fascinating. So yeah, and I gave a talk at Legal Week as well. And one of the slides I showed, you know, document automation came out in the 1970s. That's and then, you know, Hot Docs was one of the first products out there, and Contract Express was around the same time. That was in, I think those, they became commercialized in the early 90s or mid 90s. So templating technology has been around forever. And we were, you know, as Rally, we were sort of like company number 100 to, you know, launch sort of a document automation product. We were passionate about finding a way to make contracting and corporate and commercial legal work, you know, much more efficient. And we did the naive solution that a lot of, you know, technical and product teams did, was like, oh, everything should just be a template, you know, and we can do it better. And for decades, companies were trying to do this. And there was so much frustration. You know, we had a little bit on our own team, but the firms themselves were like, oh, what's wrong with us? We keep buying these Doc Auto tools and we never put them to use. It must be our problem, you know? And then we would be like, oh, you know, these lawyers, like they don't see what's so brilliant about our product, you know? And we would sell the product sometimes to a firm and they would say, you know, this is amazing. We're so excited about it. You know, as a lawyer, this may not work for me because my work's too bespoke, but for all the other lawyers in the firm, this is going to be great. But the problem is every lawyer in the firm has that view that, oh, my, this is going to be awesome. My work's really bespoke, but
That other practice group should use it.
Yeah, it's going to be great for the other practice group. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's just amazing how much effort and money went into these initiatives for decades, and to some success. Like, we had 100 customers. We still have some great customers. And yeah, actually, templates are pretty useful for certain circumstances, certain types of routine documents. Definitely, you know, places like startups and small businesses where there's not a big budget can be helpful. But largely, this technology never took off after decades, never took off at all. And I think everyone in the legal tech industry, it's kind of like, oh, like lawyers are so hard to sell to, you know, and investors, even we have to pitch to investors. They would say, oh, I've invested in legal tech companies before, you know, it's just too hard a market to sell to, you know, lawyers, they don't want to change their ways. And then comes large language models. And we launched this in late summer 2022. And we had actually launched tons of little experiments, like actually around 100, what we would call like feature or growth experiments, where we'd launch a little new feature or new marketing value proposition. Over years, we had launched many different things. And when the LLM product came out, and this was before anyone knew what ChatGPT was, it wasn't even a hype or buzz thing at the time.
You were using GPT-2, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, we started with GPT-2, although when we first like publicly launched it, it was like a GPT-3 was like when we really got good enough results to publicly launch. But yeah, we've been playing with GPT-2 as well. But it really wasn't like some people knew what GPT-2 and 3 were, but you know, most lawyers hadn't heard of it until ChatGPT came out in, I think, November, December. So no one knew what this was. There wasn't that much hype in the air. And immediately, lawyers were using this product. As soon as we got the first beta users on board, we just saw the usage charts, you know, look like they had never looked before.
Skyrocketing.
How often people were coming, just skyrocketing, yeah. And as soon as we started advertising and putting up landing pages, we saw our wait list very quickly went to around 30,000 lawyers, like in just a few months. Like, it was just totally ridiculous. And this really proved to us that the problem was never that lawyers don't want to adopt technology. It actually never was. It was that the technology actually didn't help, just wasn't that helpful for the work that they were doing. And everyone had idealistic ways about how the work should be. Everyone thought that, oh, we should have our, you know, grand precedent library and grand template library. But it wasn't that pragmatic, I think. And the LLM applications are very pragmatic because they can help you in the moment while you're in the heat of a deal. And it can be that, you know, instrumental tool that can help you without any, you know, prior upfront configuration work or, you know, setting up a whole bunch of precedents and stuff beforehand. And, you know, I think that was really the keys of why this technology is so helpful. And also that it can work with unstructured text, you know.
Right.
Legal work is essentially based around unstructured text, and everything before was about trying to structure all this unstructured text into templates. And it just, you know, felt clunky and a little bit wrong. And, you know, actually things like contracts are very nuanced, you know, the ambiguity is intentional. It's not, contracts are not supposed to be exactly like computer programs where everything is, you know, rigid and perfectly codified. So, yeah, I think the approaches work much better. And yeah, we were like, wow, like lawyers were right. They were right all along.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So yeah, yeah. I gave a talk at the ARC-KM conference in October of 22. And the premise of the talk that I was giving was exactly what you just said, is that it's not that lawyers are resistant to using technology. It's that, and I said this as someone who's invested in multiple legal tech companies, it's that the technology is not very good. And I gave several examples. I said, if you want to see there, I can show you cases of adoption where either the technology was transformative, meaning it didn't create a 15% efficiency. It created like a 10x efficiency. When it was truly transformative, it got adoption. And in instances where the user interface was such that it was almost like non-existent, where you almost didn't see it, right? It was also quite good. The problem, right? So, and then the last one was where you actually, like I gave the case of Darrow, and I don't know if you're familiar at all with Darrow, but there's a company called Darrow, and I used to use them as an example of how lawyers absolutely would use technology if it actually spoke to their interests. Darrow was a company that knew how to uncover class actions that were all around data privacy, so that like, they were never class actions that you would have found, because you would have needed to know that a company was stealing data. Like, how would you even figure out such a thing? So they would go to lawyers and they'd say, hey, I've got a case. It's absolutely massive. It's the biggest case your firm's ever seen. And all you have to do is pay us and we will show you this case, right? In that instance, the lawyers got exactly what they wanted, more business. It's like, yeah, do lawyers want to be more efficient? Yeah, they do, but it's not like what they wake up in the morning thinking about. But the entire premise of that talk was that the technology is not good enough. If it were good enough, lawyers absolutely would use it. Here's what good enough looks like. And then following that conference, I had a conversation with someone the happy hour at the end of the show. And I kind of quietly admitted to them, I said, I'm feeling a little bit bored right now by legal tech. I said, I feel like we've kind of like hit a plateau and I haven't seen anything that's really gotten me excited. All right. A month later, ChatGPT hits and I become like, I was aware of the GPTs and BERTs beforehand, but like aware in the sense that like, oh yeah, I met with the guys at Casetext once upon a time and they showed me what they were building and kind of knew a little bit about it, but like not a ton. I saw ChatGPT and all of a sudden I thought to myself, all right, we're going to see things change drastically. And like, to then now find out that Spellbook is seeing exactly that kind of like supercharged adoption proves the point. No, it's not that the lawyers are resistant to technology. The lawyers themselves were rational. And as soon as the technology is worth it, they will come. And I think you've seen that, you know, you've seen that firsthand in a way that no one's seen it.
Yep. No, you absolutely hit the nail on the head. I completely agree with that, the entirety of that sentiment. Being super honest about the level of traction and usage that we're seeing, like it's, I think when there is so much hype, a lot of people question it. Like, is this just another thing that people are excited about? But I can say that, you know, our growth metrics have been great. Like, we've been getting lots of new customers on board, but lots of legal tech companies are kind of good at sales, are good at making new sales. But the hard metric to move has always been usage. Like, are lawyers actually using this thing on a daily or weekly basis, at least? And for a lot of products, the answer ends up being no. You know, the law firm acquires the product, they hold on to a license for 2 years, and no one really sees how much it's being used or not. And eventually, you know, they kind of churn out and stop using it. And the big, most surprising thing that we see is, just that level of consistent daily and weekly usage from all our customers. And I've never seen anything like it in legal tech, but I've also not seen anything like it in really any of the other industries that I've worked in in tech. Like, it's rare to see, you know, a customer base adopt something so rapidly. And like, our proof of that is, you know, we just raised two rounds of financing last year in pretty quick succession. Yeah. And like, the reason for that was not because of hype or because like, oh, there's AI hype. It was because investors took very quick look at our metrics and were like, holy cow, like, we don't see this very often at all.
Yeah, I would say it's the opposite. If anything, like I think a lot of companies last year were struggling with the fact that like they would come up with some really good product, but VCs were hesitant to go in because they're saying like, is this really investable? Is the remote here? This is so fast developing. We're not. So like, I don't think that you were benefiting from the tailwinds of quote unquote hype investing. This wasn't Web3. This was like VCs looking at your metrics and just going like, holy cow, this is growing like a rocket.
Exactly. Yeah, and at a time when a lot of products in the software industry are not doing, so hot as well. So
yeah, and it's sort of an interesting point because I feel like because you've raised a lot of money right now and you have a lot of traction at a time when others are quite frankly like engaged in layoffs. It's sort of this interesting position that you find yourself in where like you've got money to spend on marketing. Where I'm guessing others don't. Like I think conferences a lot of times are, they're lowering their prices right now. And so you've got money that will go farther. You've also got a talent pool of people who are applying for jobs that's probably more robust than it's ever been. And it feels like, just an incredible position of power to be in. And it's got to be such a drastic change from your days in Rally where, again, as you mentioned, you sold this product into firms. It was like you couldn't sell it. But like, the difference between like driving a car and flying a rocket.
Yeah, we learned that over years. And we're very, grateful and lucky to some extent to be in this position too. I think our teams, I think like the quality our team had is not, necessarily brilliant strategy or anything like that, but we just kind of stayed in the game long enough, listened to our customers long enough and stayed lean enough to, eventually get lucky, with the LLM breakout. Yeah, we sold Rally to, over 100 law firms and witnessed many implementations of that technology. And yeah, it's very much a night and day difference, especially on the implementation side.
So I want to finish with this. I saw is it an X now or is it a post on X? I was gonna say I saw a tweet, but I know it's not a tweet. But I saw.
I heard someone call them Zeets, but I don't know.
I saw an X. I saw an X from you recently, and the X was talking about the progress from axe to chainsaw. And so give folks a little bit about what you were tweeting about, because I think this was really important. It was like your comment to me about templates. When I saw you write this, I'm like, oh man, he's really right about this. Yeah. So tell me about like axes and chainsaws.
Yeah, sure. So that came from a blog post I have on this blog.scottstevenson.net. It's called, it's time to chop trees with blunt axes. And, it's inspired by that Lincoln quote. Like if I had to chop down a tree, I'd spend 4 hours sharpening the axe. And part of our thesis is that's actually fundamentally changed because the chainsaw, with the pace of AI innovation and the pace that new products are coming out right now, you have your axe today and the chainsaw is coming out tomorrow. So, do you really need to master the axe or sharpen your axe that much if the chainsaw is coming out tomorrow? This is like a whole new paradigm, it's a whole new way of thinking about knowledge work because the actual time between the original chainsaw and axe was 8,000 years. So if you became an absolute master of the axe and sharpened it and took good care of it and, bought the best axe in the world.
And for 8,000 years, axes was selling and making axes was probably a great business.
Great business. Yeah. And so you would have been making dividends on that mastery for that much more than your lifetime. Whereas now it feels like, you can, when we pick up a new AI technology, it might be outdated within 6 months. And same for our customers, they're looking at the speed of products out there and they're like, oh, I don't know what to master or where to bet all my chips. And it's so hard because things keep coming out and products are evolving so quickly. And so our thesis and like approach is also internally for like how we build the product is like, you can't just sit there and just look at this technology evolving. We're actually just going to chop trees, pick up the axe. We don't necessarily need to be masters of it and we don't necessarily need to perfectly sharpen it and make it the best. We're going to go out and chop some trees. And then tomorrow when the chainsaw comes up, we're going to pick up that and we're going to use that too. And that's been our whole approach to the company of not getting too tied to, especially in our product, to you know, one AI model or one way of doing AI. When a new AI model comes out, like the new Gemini 1.5 model, we'll start testing that immediately, get it out to our customers really, really quickly. And that might mean that we have to throw away months of work of using some other model that didn't perform as well, you know, and we have to be really comfortable doing that. And I think for people buying these sorts of products, that's also, there's a temptation to kind of sit back and be like, oh, I'm going to wait for this to settle. But, you know, when's it going to settle? You know, right. It could take years for this. Like, this is like kind of like the internet or something. Like, it took like 20 years. I don't know. Maybe the internet's still settling today. So from what I have seen, those that are just going out, picking up these tools, doing something cool with them, and then moving on to the next thing whenever that comes out, you know, those people are doing really generally pretty well right now, versus the temptation to kind of read everything and know everything and stand on the sidelines and keep doing research. You could be stuck there for a long time while a lot of people are chopping down a lot of trees if you do that. So, yeah.
where can people go to find out more about you and about the company?
Yeah, so spellbook.legal is their website, and you can book a 7-day free trial on the site. So that's a great way to try out Spellbook.
And if you want to meet with someone, get in line, because 500 people are signing up for demos each week.
Yeah, but we can get you in. We can get you in. Our sales team is great. They'll an onboarding team. They'll get you in. Although we're only onboarding, you know, primarily lawyers at this point. So you might be waiting a while if you're not a lawyer. Yeah, you can check out my blog at blog.scottstevenson.net if you're interested in following some of my thoughts on the space.
Scott, thanks so much. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me, Zach.
Thank you for tuning in to Zach Abramowitz's Legally Disrupted. If you enjoyed today's episode, please consider leaving us a rating and a review on your favorite podcast platform. Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. La, 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 everybody. La, 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 la.